Welcome. We are Marie
and Georgia,
and we are the host of the podcast series called Everyone We Wish You Knew.
On a monthly basis, we invite people from the performing arts environment in Denmark to talk about their practices and artistic work.
We're curious about the work of dance artists, choreographers, performing artists, critics and scholars who contribute to the making of what we call the Danish dance scene.
I'd like to welcome you, Lars, here in Frisørstation, and I would like you to, traditionally as we do it, have done it until this episode, ask you to introduce your full name.
Yes.
And share a bit of your background, and you can go as far back or as in-depth as you would like to with your background.
Yeah, we can also, I could explain more later on, but I can say some basic stuff of who I am, of course. Because I'm kind of older than some of the other people you interviewed, I noticed. Yes. I'm Lars Dahl Pedersen, and I am a dance and choreographer, and I'm also I also studied philosophy. I was educated from the school in Denmark here. That time it was called the School for Modern Dance, or the National School of Contemporary Dance, and as a four-year education in 99. Which means I moved to Copenhagen in 94, and I did like preparatory dance classes and stuff, and tried to find out if I wanted to become a dancer or not. So I chose the dance road and was part of this pilot program. The first time there was a four-year education in contemporary dance in Denmark. So that's actually, 20 years ago we finished. After that, I was a dancer and choreographer and teacher in various projects, freelance based. I think at that time there was less thoughts about like working as a collective, as I see now. People coming out from schools decide to work together, which is quite fantastic. It was very much on the person. Like, I want to become a philosopher or have a dance career. I think it was like divided quite a lot.
From the beginning on?
It was more like the discourse of what you wanted to do when you finished school. Do you want to go, which path do you want to take? So
who were the leaders of the school at the time?
It was David Steele, who was a British dancer. And he later on became leader of the place, London Contemporary Dance School, or a section of the place, I think. Yeah, like the postgraduate program. Shortly I would say it was in 2011 I started studying philosophy. So I did like small productions as a dancer and as a choreographer, and the productions as a choreographer grew bigger. I got more support and funding for my own projects. And then at a certain point, I decided I also wanted to be creative with my brain. I mean, you are creative with your brain as a dancer and a choreographer, but there was some knowledge or something, like the pure theoretical thinking that I also was really interested in pursuing. So I did that. I did like open courses to do my bachelor in philosophy for 3 years, and then I did the master in 2 years afterwards.
I mean, that's also why we invited you here, because of our interest in hearing how you connect dance and philosophy in your artistic practice. And I'm sure we're gonna like a bit further down talk about like this notion of, as you said, working a bit more with your mind, in the presumption that we like dance is a physical practice and philosophy perhaps an activation and activity that happens intellectually. The connection of dance and philosophy in your own artistic practice, and if you would see your work right now, how do they connect? How do you connect dance and philosophy?
Well, I'm still trying to bridge the gap between dance and philosophy, because when I studied philosophy, I really didn't think that I was going to use it for dance. I read it just because I wanted to read philosophy. So I didn't read thinkers that wrote anything about dance necessarily. I mean, I did read a lot of phenomenology, and that's also my specialization in my master's. But I think after I finished, like 2.5 years ago, since then I've been trying to bridge the gap, find a way. how is this working? And my last thesis in philosophy was about how to kind of problematize things that are obvious. So a kind of critical thinking. And I found that some philosophers does this, and I also found that some dance practices, there are these elements of creating obstacles for yourself, of making things a little impossible, and then seeing what happens when you try to do things that you almost can't do, what happens to your awareness and creativity. So I think that's, in that sense, my creative practice or dance practice right now has been occupied with just finding out what is this kind of critical thinking I'm doing through the body. So some kind of embodied critical thinking.
I would like to touch upon your work that has this amazing title, Problematizing the Obviousness of the World. From 2016, and I don't know if it's possible, but I would wish for you to share in very shallow words what the core of your, let's say, philosophical work or approach is.
I think during these 5 years I studied philosophy, I didn't think too much about, as I said, about what dance has to do with philosophy. But in the last year I started thinking about it, and I read some texts by Bertolt Brecht, the playwright, the German playwright, and there were kind of some philosophy in his texts and theories, and then I tried to find a way, how can I go from philosophy to him, so through the Brechtian theater. So I went from phenomenology to Brechtian theater, and I compared these critical practices. So even though phenomenology normally not considered as a critical practice, is more considered as a descriptive practice, then Husserl has this idea of bracketing and putting things in brackets so you can start to question them. And in a sense, Bertolt Brecht also does that, just in a different way and with different goals, of course, but he does it to make the audience wake up and go out and make revolution. And Husserl didn't think about revolution, but there was this structure of critical thinking. That was what the thesis was about.
And you still use this the notion of the term of critical thinking in your work now?
I do a little bit, but I think it's also problematic.
What is critical thinking?
Exactly. And when you look it up, I also try to search of the words, and there's so many definitions. And some people say, okay, we teach critical thinking in schools, and then there's a certain method they do, and some is also connected to psychology. So I think it's a problematic thinking, a problematic term, but it's of course an important term. So it is of course to question the obviousness, and that's why I also called it problematizing the obviousness instead of critical thinking, because if you look more general, you can say to always problematize what you would consider or what you would take for granted. So in that really broad term, I would say critical thinking is. And then it can become political, but it can also become many other things, or being it can be on different levels. I mean, your investigation or your way of being critical. I had an ambition to, I really tried to make a PhD proposal on how these dance practices are examples of critical thinking and follows some kind of a structural resemblance with thinkers who didn't move their body at all. They were just critical through their mind and their thinking and their writing. But I wanted to look at the structure and see that, okay, here are some structural resemblances when a choreographer, for instance, work with certain scores or makes it make things difficult or makes it kind of destructive, what the way you work. So not really so much about the content, but more about the way you do it. So the content can actually be anything.
So it's the methodology you borrow.
Yeah. I think I found out it is quite a huge gap to try to bridge. It's really hard to find this. It's a little bit too ambitious.
Project.
Yeah. Because there's so many disciplines. I mean, there's strict philosophy and who does it, and then there's more. There's performance studies and there's more critical theory and. And lots of these practices use the term, but in different ways, and they kind of apply critical thinking towards each other also. So it's I think it's really interesting, and that's also what I'm interested in, doing like cross-disciplinary stuff where you use ideas from philosophy and use ideas from dance practice and try to see how can this somehow engage. But I think, for instance, there is a lot of focus on how you're aware of your own body while moving. And I've also been like interested in that. Like there's this study in philosophy of mind that somehow says that when you're moving and you do things really well, then you're not aware of what you do. And somehow dancers challenge that because if you see dance, usually you wouldn't say that these people are not aware of what they do. So it somehow connects to kind of perhaps a more traditional way of dancing where you could do certain steps in a specific way. And if you were really good at it, you didn't have to be aware of it. There was other things you could be aware of. But I think what I'm interested in is more a choreographic practice where perhaps you're not really thinking of. Well, you might be aware of your body, but you're not. You're also thinking maybe more of certain abstract tasks to do. The task that you do when you work with your body is not necessarily use your arm and legs or only use your spine or something like that that's connected to the body, but it's more maybe projected out as using a memory or using. More on something that's not accumulating specific movements.
I came across writings on this apparently new field that is called dance philosophy or performance philosophy, and that is in an effort to somehow combine these two disciplines, mm-hmm. these two fields. That seem perhaps very close, but also very far away, and especially far away because of the hierarchical positioning they have within academia.
There is this, what you say, performance philosophy, the open journal you can read online,
mm-hmm.
and it's also connected to University of, Surrey. And actually I noticed that some of these people who write or get their articles published, they are also dancers and choreographers and artists who then later on pursued academic studies. And this is different than artistic research, where you research through your own practice. It's still kind of more academic, I would say.
So you somehow feel that you have your legs in both in these more academic platforms and on the more practice as research.
I do, and I'm mixing things up, and I think that makes people confused among myself also. Also because I actually do like academic research. I do like that it's nice that there's a certain clarity to how you write. It's nice that you think about the audience or the reader of what you write, because sometimes it can also get quite... there are some continental philosophers that we like a lot, like Merleau-Ponty, for instance, and others, but they write really difficult. I mean, it's a really difficult way they write, so it's not easy to understand, where academic or no, analytical philosophy has a more tradition of making a text as an argument. Like, there are certain premises and they will lead to a conclusion. Whereas the more phenomenological way of reading or writing is very much writing saying things around or talking around, like almost cubistic, which maybe is okay for a dancer's mind, but sometimes these writers and philosophers who also come from critical theory, I think it's hard to understand them sometimes, because they, for instance, Merleau-Ponty has a tendency to write a lot about something he later on will criticize. So when you read it, you kind of think, okay, this is what he thinks, but then it's not. 5 pages later on, you realize, okay, this was actually not his point of view.
Yeah.
So if you just take out 5 pages, this is what Merleau-Ponty says about the body, then, okay, this was actually not what he meant.
Yeah. But then it's also there you already talk about method.
Yeah.
Yeah. And which method that you would you prefer or try
I would strive to learn how to still write quite clear, because it's nice that that people understand that there's not only, for instance, artistic or artists who would understand it, and or the other way around. Academia.
Yeah, and what I mean, there are a lot of things that perhaps are coming again, and perhaps you have to go around find back to some things, but when you already, now we have this within your practice and other practices that are present now, there is like this, the philosophy and dance, and I would like to ask you how balanced you think the correlation between dance, if we suppose that as a physical activity and a practice that is strongly connected to the body, and philosophy supposed as an intellectual.
But I think it depends if you want to do more conceptual.
If
the
you
philosophy
as
an example.
Perhaps, yes.
But I want it to be really movement-based choreography. That's what not every choreographer to be, but that's the choreography I'm interested in, at the moment at least. I mean, I've seen a lot of really interesting conceptual artwork and also conceptual choreography that's amazing, where people don't dance at all. But I think I'm quite interested in how these philosophical thoughts are somehow interacting with movement. Physical movement. So of course these philosophical thoughts that I use, I mean, in the practice that I'm doing with Marlene Bondesen and Mette Møller-Overgaard, we have these kind of different approaches to how we challenge each other, but of course I'm the one then coming with these more philosophical challenges that some of the others think is annoying. But that's kind of challenges like never return to the place you came from, or say no to the impulses you're doing, or something like that. Never do the same thing again. It's impossible not to do the same thing again, but it has to do with the dancing. So as you're moving, you want to try to do something that the thing you just did, never return to that. Do something else. Something like that. That would be an example of philosophical task to somehow deal with physically.
I think it's also nice to have examples, so perhaps if you also want to talk a bit about your your work and your, the projects that are you engaging with.
Yeah.
Now you talked about the collaboration you have with Marlene and Mette. If you want to go a bit more in depth in that specific project, or just share a bit what are you doing?
But I mean, I'm not doing so many artistic projects at the moment. That's the main project I do with those two, because I'm also teaching assistant at the University of Southern Denmark, where I teach all the sports students performance and I think we call it movement communication or something like that. So I use a lot of hours on finding ways how to teach or to challenge these sports students, their mind, what dance can be. If it's not just a sports discipline, what is it then? How can it be a practice? But yeah, with Marlene and Mette, it developed kind of as a teaching project to begin with, and then we decided how can we do things like do it as a practice where we somehow do our own practices or throw in ideas and create something where we dance together. And we had this opportunity to get funding to do an artist in residency project at high schools. So we somehow brought it to the high schools and we found a way to share our practice with the students. So we were kind of, the goal was that we still were really challenging ourselves as dancers and choreographers while the students were there, and they were somehow gradually taking part of this practice with us. What I brought into this practice was the collaboration I had with Rosemary Butcher, the British choreographer, that I had several residencies with, and I did this one. The last residency I had with her was in 2014, where I worked as a solo, where I was speaking and dancing at the same time. So I was actually saying out aloud the challenges that I was supposed to do, or I was like the score for my dancing was kind of spoken out as I was performing it. So I found a way to say things out aloud as I was moving, and that somehow I tried to make Marlene and Mette do that as well.
Is it a bit connected with this reflecting and doing?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Before I started studying philosophy and becoming interested in philosophy, even though my work wasn't really, I don't know if it was philosophical, it was more poetic, but actually I was quite interested in state of mind, what kind of, or more the affective or emotional atmosphere you could get into through movement. And also these ideas of how the atmosphere changes suddenly. How can you create movement, and then what happens when suddenly the atmosphere or the emotion or the feeling changes? How can you show that or create that through movement? So in a sense, it's related, these philosophical thoughts, because I'm still interested in how you are aware. What is your presence when you're moving? What are you aware? What are your focus? Are you focused on your body? Are you focused on solving a task? Or what are you thinking about when you're moving? Are you immersed in the movement? There's this whole spectrum between being totally immersed in movement sometimes and then trying to avoid being immersed in it. Really avoid, keep challenging yourself, but then at a certain, I mean, it's not just one thing all the time. It's different ways of being reflected while moving, I think.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think of two things, and I think I will start with the second one, and it is if there is an attempt to claim or reclaim, but probably claim the body as a knowledge productive or reflective medium within philosophy.
Mm.
And I don't know how, yeah. I think it's something that newer, yeah, as either practitioners or academics that try to, justify this knowledge production that happens through physical practice, but that how that somehow collides with our idea of, the mind hierarchy.
Yeah. But actually, I went to a conference recently in phenomenology, and there was also some researcher who claimed this as something that would be very really provoking to philosophers, that you would claim that dance and other activities are also knowledge-seeking and producing. But some traditional philosophers says, no, it's not really... It doesn't provoke us. We know that. I mean, it's just different domains that you... So I'm not sure it's like a big... Maybe it's more among us as dancers. Mm. Then we kind of have to take that.
We feel that we are responsible for
or
giving
weight. Yeah, we kind of have to really understand ourselves because, I don't know, it's of course different. But when you're trained as a dancer, that's not really what you... Of course, you know that the body, you've been, I don't know, some are told that the body is a tool that you have to train and train and train, and it can become something that helps you.
Better, faster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe it's more on our side that we have to find this. Or some also resist it. I mean, some don't think it doesn't belong to dance. Dance has to communicate a story or... be more it can't be so intellectual.
Yeah, and it's true, and I don't think either myself or you or us as sitting here can claim that it's like speaking on behalf of the Danish
dance.
Because the Danish dance environment has its own not so much groups but ways of working and interests and
But you're right that, I mean, if I speak about through my own experience, then I would say that when I started doing that practice, it was certainly to find out that I could make a practice that was knowledge-seeking activity. That through these tasks or score, whatever it was, I did like a certain line of movement in a choreography that was kind of an open choreography. Through that, I somehow became aware of something new. So, and that was like, I did it for that purpose. I didn't do it to do a dance piece in a traditional sense that could be put on stage. That wasn't what I was interested in. I was interested in putting myself in a situation where I could challenge myself so much that something new happened that surprised me. That I somehow, the body somehow surprised my intellect or, So it wasn't tasks or that I was going to solve and then everything was fine. It was tasks that was impossible to solve in a certain sense, that the answer was something unexpected. But I think also some dancers would say they also do that. I mean, when you're on stage doing a piece, you could also perhaps say that you never do it in the same way or...
I think if I could relate a bit on my own practice, and it's also some discussions I had with Camilla Puttingsrud, and it has to do with this reflecting in doing, and perhaps this losing yourself in performing.
Yeah.
And I think it's perhaps a state that at least I have experienced several times during perhaps not so much doing practicing and doing the physical activity, but practicing and doing performance.
Yeah.
That is a special state of bodily and a bodily state and a state of mind that comes through the doing. But I don't think I can articulate whether that is some kind of reflection or non-reflection of the movement.
Because then we have like a little perhaps a concept or a way of using the words, because
probably
because that's when it gets difficult, because you can say that the body is reflecting somehow, and I think that's also what Camille is working on. Like, she has this, her thesis was thinking toes or something like that, whereas I think I've been more abstract in my way of using the word thinking, really thinking, theoretical thinking while dancing. I was trying to, I can also be physical, I don't have to sit down at a table to think in more abstract ways, whereas I think the other tradition that Camille is more trying to open up is more how we are reflective with our body. That it's not about, it's a special way of being immersed, I guess, yeah. It's not the brainless immersion that you, or being on autopilot, but there's a certain awareness, but it's through the body. It's not that you're thinking about certain things. We both read, we went to a reading group, me and Camille once, and we read this, there's a dancer, a ballet dancer called Barbara Montero, and she has written this book, Thinking in Action, I think it's called, or she has a lot of things, but she's been like, she's more like a traditional philosopher, I would say, but she's using her ballet background, and her example of being a reflective dancer would be the ballet dancer who's like, going across the floor, and then she's thinking about how to accentuate the music, or how to use the music with her movement, for instance, in different ways. That's her, one of the examples. And kind of, I was thinking, yes, but that's not really what we can. What about these disturbances? How can you make more disturbance? I mean, I'm more interested in these things that disturbs you than thinking about how to use the music, for instance. So it's really different from which perspective you come from.
And that's also perhaps where dance as a term itself is so expanded now, that we cannot only talk about ballet dancers or classically trained modern dancers.
No.
And then it becomes, of course, more complex. Who is the dancer and what is she or he doing? Yeah. Do you have any plans coming at that? I heard you saying that perhaps some more, you're teaching, your work as a facilitator fills quite a lot of space right now, and that you don't perhaps have time to do your artistic projects. But do you have any projects?
Right now I'm more working on trying to find possibilities to do a PhD. But that's a long, long way, because since I want to still bridge the gap, it's not so easily done. But I'm working with University of Southern Denmark to try to make a description for a possible PhD.
And in which field?
But then, it started out as this kind of reflective action, or like, building on perhaps Barbara Montero's idea that still we haven't still captured how dancers use these abstract tasks of moving. That's one idea, and I don't know, I'm still having it, or I kind of put it a little bit aside, and now I'm more working on participatory community projects, because perhaps it's easier to get funding through that. And then I can somehow fit in the other idea in that. So I'm reading, for instance, Claire Bishop, who wrote this book called Artificial Health, where she kind of really criticized or she questions these participatory community projects in what they are and what they somehow claim to be. And she's building her ideas actually on Rancière, this famous text, The Emancipated Spectator, that I used a lot in theater studies and also in dance studies. And she somehow, she's using that text in a more practical sense, where she talks about these community projects. That when artists go out in communities, then it becomes somehow the goal just to make the community, for instance, dance or be involved. And then the question is it still art or is it something else? Is this, what kind of an intervention is it? So I'm kind of just reading about stuff like that at the moment.
It's also very up to date in the sense that there are very straight lines coming from the culture ministry around their effort on creating possibilities for participatory community work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So perhaps it's nice to have people that really get into the core of the work and what it is.
So I think instead of having ambitions to do my own artistic projects, I think I'm still trying to find a way to read theory and getting closer to dance, but in a critical sense, in a philosophical sense, that somehow bring in dance in how to problematize ways it's used or also maybe enlightened. There's also fantastic things about community projects. It's just somehow often quite either you're against it or you really, it's really something the government wants and they make somebody, I read some reports, I think maybe more in Britain, there were some reports published saying, okay, here's 50 things that the citizen will gain from meeting the artist. So, but like a really positive list instead of like, I mean, maybe there's some citizens will really, really don't care or think it's a waste of money, and other people will really be really, there's some nuances that somehow is missed out on this experience when you meet the art or meet the artist. And perhaps even this disturbance that you're really annoyed by this artist coming into your neighborhood is also a quality that can be somehow described.
I don't know if you would like to share something that has not been shared yet.
I think I would say maybe one thing that's what I realized when I started studying philosophy is that I became aware of this activity that happens when you read philosophy or when you write philosophy, that there's a really huge activity even though you sit still. And I was really intrigued by that or fascinated by it. So even though that I now really try to have a movement-based practice, I still really think it's amazing how huge creativity you can have by just thinking.
Can you explain a bit this activity?
But I just noticed that when I went to the faculty at the university, people were not moving. It was so quiet. But there was a lot of thinking going on. And it was like the same energy that when you're moving or doing a choreography in the studio, this kind of what we talked about, the knowledge seeking activity, that you really want to solve something, and this intense awareness of or concentration that I find so fascinating. But also reading texts, there are some texts that are really nice to read because they are somehow turning things around, making you consider practices, or like there's some, for instance, I read this political text about it was quite Marxist based, Carol Pateman, she's like a feminist who writes political theory, and she wrote about this working contract, that you enter into a working contract, and she somehow also were drawing lines back to in philosophy, to when there was this philosopher Locke who said that you have a property in the person, so you somehow you own yourself, and somehow she somehow problematized that idea, because if you own yourself, you can also sell yourself. So you can also, when you sign an employment contract, you also somehow, okay, I'm selling myself to this employer, even though it's like a democratic society we live in. Even here now, we sell ourselves.
How is that connected? I think I lost a bit.
I know. Me too.
No, but it's because it's so interesting. But in the relation to the working ways.
I think it's gonna. Well, it was just an example of like how when you read things that you
how
become
changes
aware.
Them.
Yeah, become aware of something that you might have thought of being really quite democratic, or that like she just opened up a way to see our society as less democratic. So, for instance, in a corporation or in even of the way we work, when we sign a contract, we somehow accept certain premises that are really different than how we are treated as citizens in a community. So the state would, of course some would claim that, but normally the state doesn't really make a contract with the citizens, but your boss does. The way the boss makes you come to work for 8 hours a day in a specific way through a contract. that's interesting. That's still quite old-fashioned.
Yeah, of course. And it's also like...
And when you think about, okay, we want to work more collectively or sharing the leadership, people still think it's impossible to do that.
Yeah.
But it would be more democratic. Yeah, how can you democratize the workplace? It was, I mean, now I'm just shifting a little bit the subject, but it was just a text that I I think is a really good example of certain critical thinking, that somehow it makes you see something that you thought was really quite fair as not that fair, or actually giving you less freedom.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now I at least got the thread, and now we talked a lot, and I think there are a lot of names and perhaps forums and platforms that have already been said.
Mm-hmm.
But would you like to share any recommendations or suggestions that you used as inspiration source in your practice, if they haven't been mentioned already?
Well. I still go back to Gertrude Stein, actually, that I made this piece and a study of her, because I was lucky to get this residency program in 2009, I think it was. Koya Rome was the title of that program, where you got to do 8 weeks of residency during a whole year. It was quite a fantastic program. But through that, I kind of started to study how to use ideas from Gertrude Stein, who was this writer who lived in American writer who lived in Paris in the 20s, and still her work I'm still inspired by. So it's not a philosopher, but she somehow makes there's really some dancing with the words that are still really interesting.
Yeah.
And there's so many short texts by her that you also it's accessible. Compared to if you have to read some kind of huge philosophy, and still Bertolt Brecht, I still think some of his I wasn't aware, but he has done a lot of theoretical text also, and also quite short that you can also be inspired by. Yeah.
I think I covered quite a lot of the points that I had written down and that I would like to hear of. And as I said, we probably opened more doors than closing.
Yeah.
But I would then like to say thank you for sharing. your interest in your work, and hopefully it reaches something, even if people don't understand
hopefully.
The linear dramaturgy of what we are saying.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. And also, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's about like what we talked about. It's not necessarily this is a list of what you should read if you want to be interested in philosophy. But yeah, I guess if you're interested, then it's nice to add on this, read some stuff and be inspired in your own way and finding your own way of interpreting what you read instead of having to like really understanding a text in a specific way. I think that as artists we can do that. We can allow ourselves to interpret.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great.